Driving season is in full swing, and an unexpected car repair can cost hundreds, even thousands to fix, ruining your road trip. That's why I recommend getting extended coverage from CarShield. A new water pump could set you back over $500. Replacing your AC can cost as much as $1,500. With CarShield, the dealership or your favorite mechanic can do the work. CarShield does the rest, getting them paid directly. Save yourself from high repair bills with CarShield. Call 800-CAR-6100, mention code Benson, or visit CarShield.com. Use code Benson to save 10%. CarShield.com, a deductible may apply.
Independent in thoughts and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
I would get along with Putin.
I've dealt with Russia.
I think I would have a great relationship with Russia and with Putin.
I would, at the same time, get along very well with Vladimir Putin.
That's Vladimir Putin. Have you ever met the guy?
A tough guy. I met him once. And I got to know him very well. And the biggest thing we have is that we were on 60 Minutes together, and we had fantastic ratings. One of your best rated shows in a long time. So that was good, right? So we were stable mates.
I have nothing to do with Putin. I've never spoken to him. I don't know anything about him other than he will respect me.
And you will respect my authority.
It is Friday. We are enjoying ourselves here. Normally, he's in the studio with me, but because of our new big switch to a new studio that we have, it's gorgeous. Love it. He is not here. He will join us again in studio next week, but always with us as ever from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research, Jim Kennedy. And Jim, they met today. They shook hands. One person got a hand on somebody's elbow, and now let the debate begin on who was cooler, stronger, and imposed their will.
Absolutely. I'm sure the American media will always probably say Putin won, but, you know, who knows these things, how they come out. If we can get a ceasefire to Syria out of this, hey, I think everyone's a winner in that case.
You know, speaking of Syria, I have said all along, I do not worry about the little man with no plan and no real weapons of mass destruction when it comes to us. Little weapons. Not that they're not dangerous, not that they can't kill millions of people in Seoul, but I mean, we're all freaking out about this guy when, in truth, Syria is a bigger deal because eventually there's going to be two people standing there, and neither of them are going to be Syrian staring at each other. It's going to be us and Russia, and this ceasefire is a big deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it helps start to settle the situation down. It allows Iraq to evolve, hopefully back to something. And the problem is, though, is that the winner out of this is probably going to be Putin, because what he's going to get, he's going to get himself a nice warm weather port on the Mediterranean. And that gives him access to a lot more stuff than he had before this. And that's what his gift is from Bashar Assad for basically backing him in this conflict. Now, what happens to Bashar Assad? Probably nothing. He probably stays there. But you're still going to have a lot of very upset Syrians, as you can see how this ceasefire works out and if this is going to be a stepping stone to some sort of a peace accord amongst the multi-parties that are involved in this conflict.
And you talk about Bashar al-Assad, and the fact is he's not only got his port now, Putin does, but now he's got a puppet. And even if they don't hold all of the country, and even if there's a potential, and I still think at some point in time it breaks up into two countries, potentially three countries or three regions, he's got what he wants, and he's got Assad as his new puppet there.
No, correct. Exactly. That's exactly what he wanted, and it's exactly what he's gotten. Because like you said, this is a multi-party problem. This is not just ISIS versus Assad. It's ISIS versus Assad versus the Kurds, with the Russians overlooking and, of course, the Americans overlooking, too.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. And, Jim, so they met today. They talked, and a lot of it was like, what are they going to talk about? You know, they did talk, and they talked about the meddling in the election. They talked about the fact that Russia played a part in the election. I don't think it really changed too many minds or hearts out there, but they definitely played a part in it. And then you get two conflicting stories, and everybody goes, well, who do you believe? Because, well, maybe I believe Putin more, maybe I believe Trump. I said, you know, I believe Tillerson. And Tillerson came out and said they still have a hurdle to get over, but they'll move forward and they're going to try to. And that Trump pushed him on the issue and continued to do so, and Putin said, no, we didn't do it.
Right. I thought the wording was very interesting. If I remember properly, the wording was Putin or the Trump agreed that Putin was not involved in hacking the election. Okay, well, that's very different than interfering in the election. That clearly means that he did not go into voting machines and try to change votes. And I don't think there was really anybody that was claiming that Putin hacked the election. Putin interfered in the election because of the DNC hacking and other possible other ways getting into voter registration rolls. So it's very interesting, the, you know, the wordplay on that, where, yes, you're very, that is accurate, but is that really what Putin was involved with? It wasn't hacking, it was interfering.
And, you know, when we talk about that, and I said this all along, look, if Hillary was where Trump was in June, July, August, in the sense that 95% of the country and the odds makers and the news expected her to clean his clock and win, you would have seen a different thing. You would have seen more hacking, more stories, more issues come out, because this wasn't about changing the hearts and minds of the people. This was about them weakening somebody who was potentially going to be the president of the United States, bringing him down a notch, and getting really a person that's moving into the presidency on shaky grounds as they move into those first few months to maneuver through everything. This wasn't about changing hearts and minds.
Well, no, it was just basically making their influence. They did not want Hillary Clinton to win. Vladimir Putin has a gripe with Hillary Clinton, and that is why he, whatever activities they did, that's why he did that. That's why they hacked the DNC, which wasn't that difficult, with Podesta basically giving them his email or his password. He very much helped them out. But it wasn't so much, everyone wants to say, oh, he was trying to help Trump. He's trying to help Trump. Well, no, he was simply trying to interfere with Hillary Clinton becoming elected. And I believe that's probably what they did.
Podesta. See, you know what? Of all the things that happened, I don't want to relitigate it. I don't want to relitigate it. I want to relive it. But the thing that makes me laugh about all of this is, first of all, Podesta is the kind of person that answers the email from the Nigerian king and gives them all the bank info. Secondly, it was always about the act, never about the horrible things inside of the emails that were true about other people that pissed them off. And that, to me, was very telling.
No, absolutely. And the other part was, where's the 30,000 emails that Hillary, quote unquote, decided that what was in those emails, the 30,000 she threw away because they were about yoga schedules and her mother's funeral and Chelsea's wedding and Bill, doing whatever Bill did. Those, you know, what was in those emails also was very interesting, too. But yes, I would agree. I would think that Podesta would then threaten the prince from Nigeria when he didn't send him the money, knowing Podesta.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. All right, so they met today. They did all that. They shook it out. It was fun. Yeah, we move on with our lives. I've said that this is a marathon. These are two guys, though, Jim. It's a psychological battle. These are two guys that are much of the same as far as the way that they've cut their teeth, one in business, one in the world of politics and spying. But they're both type A personalities. They're both driven. They're both the kind of person that wants to play the measuring game. And yet they go about it in a different way. But in many ways, they're very similar.
Yes, no, absolutely. They've become successful through various channels, like you said. I mean, I would not have been surprised to basically hear that the two guys basically rolled up their arms and tried to arm wrestle each other, because that just seems like the two guys they are. They're that competitive when it comes to winning and being the best. Putin's gotten his money through illicit means. Trump's gotten his almost probably through legal means, through business and being somewhat successful in business and accumulating whether $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion, whereas Putin's $20 billion estimated has come from basically graft and collecting it off the top. So their wealth has come from different channels. But yes, they are very competitive people. I would agree 100% with that.
And I looked today, I watched a lot of it today, and you know, some of the other stuff that struck me that I found to be very interesting is we hear a lot of stuff about, and again, Trump is Trump, and he's annoying at times, he's a pain in the ass, I get frustrated with him, I think it's beneath the office, some of the things he does, beneath a grown man, some of the things that he does, but whatever, you know what, he's still winning, and until he starts to lose, who am I to sit here and say, you know, what he should or shouldn't do? That's just my opinion, and I'll throw it out there, but... Yeah, I think we're too quick to dismiss him. A lot of people out there, even people that may have voted for him but held their nose, Or people who abstained from voting at all and said, hey, you know, I'm not just going to vote because I don't like either of these candidates, that somehow this guy's an idiot and he's not charming. And yet I'm watching today, and with Marcon and with Merkel and them, he had them, and he had them laughing. You could see the walls had come down. And it's almost one of those things where you want to, like, some of these people want to have a disdain for this guy, but they kind of like him.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's from everybody that I've ever known that's met the guy, he's a likable person. He's not vile. He's somebody who basically wants to be your friend because he knows that at some point you may be valuable for something. So it's good to have that business card in his pocket or that contact that he can call up if he ever does need something, especially if you're involved in anything in New York City. Trump may need you, or you may need something from Donald Trump, to where then you can then later pay him back. So yes, he's most definitely going to want to, and as they get more used to him, I mean, I think a lot of it was at the start, they're just figuring, well, he's going to go away, and well, no, he's the American president. He is going to be there for the next 4 and/or 8 years, so you'd better get used to him, and you're going to need to deal with him. And whether Angela Merkel likes him or not, she's going to be dealing with him, provided she stays on as in her post going forward.
His name's Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. You're going to stick through, yeah, for another segment? Sound good?
Yes, sir.
Right on. He's going to stick with us. 844-DIG-CHAD. You can text the program 323-538-2423. 323-538-2423. I want to touch on what's going on, not only with ICE, but I also want to touch on the business side of the world, because there are job numbers, and I want to touch on that. I also want to touch on what's happening in the G20 summit outside of these two men shaking hands and talking. It's the Chad Benson Show.
We're happy to serve you here at the Chad Benson Show.
Do you think it's too hot for pork chops?
Would you like fries with your fast food politics?
Man, I'm hungry. I'm going to get some fries.
Sure.
I don't know why I ever come in here.
222,000. June non-farm payrolls increased by 222,000 jobs. The unemployment rate is 4.4%. Average hourly earnings increased 0.2%. That's the highest since February of this year as far as the monthly job gains.
Ah, the numbers. It's all about numbers. It's all about data. Not great, but good. Shows some life in the old dog out there. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research joins us, as he does every Friday. So, Jim, those are the numbers, not overwhelming, but showing some stability in the marketplace, and that we're adding some jobs. And there's a little growth as far as the pay side of it goes. But if you're the president, you can't feel horrible.
No, absolutely not. These are good numbers, not great numbers. Remember, we need to have between 150 and 175,000 a month just to keep even. So we added about 75,000 additional jobs above keeping even. One of the things that's a little concerning for the people out there are the people that are employed part-time that want to be employed full-time. We still have 5.3 million Americans out there that want full-time jobs and either have to work two jobs to get that or only work in one and not pulling in 40 hours a week. So that's still problematic. And that number hasn't changed in a year. So we're not getting that number driven down. But the 222 keeps us right on average for what we for what was the numbers were in 2016. So Trump's not doing any better than Obama at this point, nor is he doing any worse than Obama at this point. So pretty much it's a toss-up on that point. And that 5.3 million hasn't come down for about 18 months either. So that's a number that I would like to look at seeing coming down, because getting those people back to 40 hours is something that's really important.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. You know, as we look at the jobs and we look at everything, despite all the negative, and again, some of it and a good portion of it self-inflicted when it comes to Trump, people haven't abandoned him. People haven't run away from him. And he's, people are still, there's still that sense and confidence that the economy still feels like it's ticking forward, even though, like you said, it's somewhat of a toss-up at this point in time when it comes to the numbers. There is a sense and feel that, like, hey, this thing is just getting ready to get over the top of that mountain, and then away it's going to go.
Yeah, that's what people are really are looking forward to. they're not as concerned as they were 12 or 18 or 24 months ago as far as, am I going to get to keep my job? They kind of sense that they are at this point. They're not seeing as many layoffs. They're not seeing as many firms that are announced reductions of force. So there's less concern about it, but there's still a anticipation that it's going to get better. It just keeps looking like, you know, it's like you're chasing that train and we don't know if it's getting farther away or if we're getting closer to it, to where we're basically going to get that accelerated and we're going to start getting 300,000 jobs and 400,000 jobs. We're going to get GDP growth in the 3% and the 4%. Maybe even to the 5%. So that's what we're really kind of looking for. That's what everyone just keeps hoping is right around the corner.
And you know, you talk about the GDP, you talk about things like that. You know, the G20 is one of the things where they get together. It's not just the 20 nations with the fattest wallets. It's they invite other nations there who are like essentially permanent invitees. They get to come and hang out. They don't get to go to the champagne room, but they get to come hang out inside the building, and that's still kind of cool too. But when you look at this, trade took place. European Union and Japan signed a big trade deal. A lot of people talking about trade. Where's ours? Because we have some trade deals that are very consumer friendly, but not business friendly and not worker friendly. And I think a lot of people are going to start to turn their attention to, hey, let's not forget about trade, Mr. President. Let's not forget about trade, all you guys out there in the world of politics that deal on that side of it. Let's get some stuff done.
No, absolutely. Trump has talked a lot about trade deals, but Trump is more of a guy that wants to do bilateral trade deals, meaning the U.S. and Japan, not the U.S. and Asia or the U.S. and Europe. He wants to do the U.S. and the Great Britain or U.S. and Germany. He wants to do one-on-one trade deals, not large like the TPP pact that was, that was from the Obama administration. And that's why he, wasn't in favor of that. He likes to do one-on-one types of deals where it's just one country against, or not against another, but one country with another. And those can be negotiated. We'll see how that's going to pan out, because a lot of those deals that we've backed out of, now we're going to have to start going into one-on-ones, just like Britain is going to have to start doing one-on-ones after they leave through Brexit.
And, as I was trying to explain to people earlier, we love to consume, so we like some of the deals because of our consumer side. But on the other side of things, it's hurt our employees. And on top of that, it's also hurt some of our exporters here. We got about 30 seconds, but our exporters, our businesses here that export elsewhere, they've felt over the last, decade plus the sting of bad trade deals.
No, absolutely. I mean, all of the deals where we've been bringing in cheap stuff from China, that accelerates our trade deficit, but it makes for $4 t-shirts and cheap gizmos at Walmart. Absolutely. But like you said, they've been problematic for some businesses because they're losing the business to China.
We're going to keep Jim around for one more. It's the Chad Benson Show.
The Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
We're enjoying ourselves, having fun. We were just talking about Tiger Woods and, earlier we talked about opioid addictions and he said he announced on Twitter that he's getting out, Jim, and Jim Kennedy's with us from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. And I was saying to Jim, I said, look, we know he's a philanderer. Fine, it is what it is. He paid out a lot of money to his wife. I'm sure they're in good standings. Everybody can move on with themselves. But people say, well, I don't really think – I think he got in trouble, and that's why he went to I said, no, I think he had a problem. I said, I think his body is beat to hell. I said, you can't play that golf that long, anything that long. I don't care if you're just a recreational player. And for those of you out there who play, and not have some pain. Now think of it to the point where since the time he could walk, he's been swinging a golf club until his 30s and now early 40s, and the kind of torque that he gets, I'm surprised he lasted as long as he did, and I could easily see how you could start popping those pills and it gets away from you.
Yeah, one of the worst fears, and knock on wood, I've been able to avoid it as a golfer, is a back injury. And he didn't. He's hurt his back, and that's what all of his problems are right now. And from what I've heard through various sources is that he's been really in bad pain. And it's not so much pain just from playing golf. It's like he can't walk comfortably. He can't sit comfortably. There isn't a lot of relief from it. And that's possibly where the problem came in with the pills, where it just got so bad where he just couldn't manage it and started throwing more pills at it. And then, you know, combining them with an Ambien possibly or something. And it's a bad combination if you start mixing those pills together.
And, you know, and the sad thing is, and the last thing before we step on to something else, the sad thing is anybody who's ever had a back injury or any kind of chronic injury, you know, it gets to the point where it affects every aspect of your life, whether you're trying to sleep, whether you're sitting, whether you're walking. And the back is one of those things where once you have that problem, it is almost entirely something that will stick with you the rest of your life. All right. So this week, Jim, San Francisco, in its fine fashion, decided that it owed a man $190,000 because it violated his sanctuary city rights, because he went to go in, an El Salvadorian, it was here illegally, went to go in to claim his car that had been stolen, went into the police station. They said, yeah, it'll be a second. He goes outside, and the next thing you know, he is arrested because there's a warrant out for him for ICE. They felt they violated the sanctuary city. They're going to pay him about $200,000. Have we lost the plot now in this world?
Oh, I think San Francisco lost the plot when Kamala Harris became district attorney and started adopting a lot of these sanctuary city policies. Absolutely. This is just ridiculous. I mean, it doesn't even go strong enough to comment on the problem that's going on up there. It's just ridiculous that this man gets paid anything. All he should get is a paid ticket back to El Salvador. And I believe that didn't they make the police officer stand up and apologize to him and say that he was sorry that he made his daughter see him be arrested? The man is committing a crime by being here illegally. His daughter should have seen it because her father committed a crime by being here illegally. I don't understand what these people are thinking. What part of the law of it's illegal to cross the border without proper documentation do they not understand?
And, Jimmy, you know, as we talk about that, Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research joins us, as he does every Friday. As we talk about that, the thing that drives me crazy is it's the red badge of courage. It's the you're the martyr. It's somehow you're a protected species. And, again, we can empathize. We can even admire the fact that somebody's willing to take the risk that some of these people do to come from the places they come and the horrific situations they have to travel through and they leave. I understand that. And I'm not one of these people that just says, let's throw them all back. That's not who I am. But I look at this situation and I think to myself, a 24-year-old black guy who's maybe done something stupid in his past and maybe has some weed on him and it's a parole violation, and you don't feel sorry for that guy, Mr. Officer in City, when you put him in jail and you separate him from his family, or the single mom that's got like 7 or 8, you know, she's had issues with parking tickets and she's got a suspended license, but she's not a bad hurt person and she's got the kids in the back and they're going to take away her car and or, you know, her registration's expired and, you know, they're like, oh, you got a suspended license and you're driving on it. Sorry, we're going to take you away. You don't feel sorry about that, but somehow we're supposed to go, you're a protected species. We feel sorry for you.
Yeah, I don't. I just do not completely at all understand it. If there's one thing about, okay, let's say that we're not going to arrest the guy and we're going to give him back his car and kind of pretend that we didn't know that he was illegal and let him go on his way. But for the city to give him $190,000 as compensation in a state that is going down the tubes financially, we are so broke with overburden of pensions in the state of California, with San Francisco shelling out $190,000 to an illegal alien for simply being arrested for being an illegal alien, just makes no sense. And I just don't know where we draw the line on sanity stopping.
And, you know, with California efforting right now, SB 54 getting through, and Kevin De Leon very excited about it, and looks like it's going to become a sanctuary state, we're going to have a battle between the feds and the California itself, and other states will be looking, because California is on the front line. And I bring it up because California is on the front line, and other states that are against Trump and who want to be part of that resist movement are going to see how this really plays out. Is Trump going to say no to federal funds when it comes to if you're going to be a sanctuary city or sanctuary state? Are they going to fight you tooth and nail? Is it going to hurt your state? And California is literally the testing ground to find out how much you can resist Trump and what the power of the purse is going to do for Trump.
No, absolutely. Because, I mean, short of actually getting the U.S. Army to basically march in and putting the people in jail or something, I'm not sure what else they can do. It is up to the power of the purse to basically change their actions and to change the way that they're doing business to basically make them feel it literally in the wallet. I think that's the only way you're going to get through to these people that what you're doing is wrong. Because why does it stop there? Why don't we just say, you know what? We don't think that because we don't approve of Trump, we don't approve how he uses the military, that we should have to pay our federal taxes anymore because they're going to projects that we don't like. We don't want them to basically go into Iraq or into Afghanistan or wherever. And we don't want Trump getting money to run the White House because we don't approve of Donald Trump. We're going to resist him and we're going to pay our federal taxes. Where does this stop? This just keeps going down a slippery slope, and you've got to stop this somewhere. And it's about time that we stop this.
Absolutely. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research joins us. We move on from there to healthcare. Once again, another week's gone by. They were on vacation, but it's lingering out there. People are trying to figure it out. Jason Chavis, who's obviously done, he's like, I'm out, I'm done. And this week he was very forthright in a lot of things he said. It's like, look, we've not passed anything spectacular. The bills aren't getting done. And this thing should have been done a long time ago. I came in here when Obama was elected the same time, and we swore we would repeal it, and we've not done any of that. Is there any future in sight, not only just for this, but just look at the bills, tax reform, regulation reform, immigration reform. Is there anything in sight, at least this year, that you think will get done?
Well, remember, the two bills were passed in the House for immigration reform before the break, the one Kate's Law bill and the defunding, as we talked about, sanctuary cities. So let's see where those go in the Senate. From what I've heard, is the Kate's Law is a fairly solid bill that should get through the Senate without too much problem. The sanctuary city bill, well, that's going to be somewhat problematic because you're going to have a lot of, you know, of the senators from the liberal states that are certainly not going to sign on to that. So that's something that could happen. The healthcare vote, it's supposed to happen week after next. It was a very interesting comment from Pat Toomey on the healthcare bill. He said, look, we didn't really expect at this point last year that Donald Trump was going to win. So we really weren't prepared to, when he came into office, to put together a healthcare bill. And he may have made the mistake of speaking the truth, but I would not be surprised if that really was, they weren't really prepared for it. They figured, well, Hillary's going to win four more years, so we have to worry about actually repealing and replacing this thing. And then Trump comes along, and all of a sudden we got to do it now. Susan Collins is somebody who may come into play if this becomes some sort of a bipartisan issue where they have to go to the Democrats and try to get some buy-in from some of their people, because she's a Republican who's been on the fence, one of the eight. And she may play a role being able to basically either shepherd back some Republicans or go across the aisle and grab some Democrats if they can come up with some issues that they can find some sort of bipartisan agreement on.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. And Jim, earlier today, and I know you were listening, you texted me that, you know, we had Dr. Joe Chambers on. If you guys didn't listen, it was in the second hour. Grab the podcast. Really good, interview. And he's very unique. He has been a doctor. He was born and raised in Europe, and he's been a doctor there. He's been a doctor in Canada. He's been a doctor here. And a lot of what he said, I kind of agree with. And I think eventually we're heading in a direction where we're going to have a two-tiered system. And it's the one thing that the Democrats scream they want, which is that socialized medicine, the single payer, whatever they want to call it. You can spin it for what it is. But he also pointed out that, you know, they're going to have to accept the fact that there are going to be people out there that were willing to pay for it. And the better care that's going to come, and we've talked about it ad nauseum here. It's in the end, it should be about the health care provider and the patient, which rarely it is, because it's really only about the cost and having a card. And at this point in time, I think we're headed to a single payer fast, but there is going to be a real big divide in care because you will have haves and have nots bigger than you have now.
No, it'll be a lot more dramatic, too, in the difference between the health care you're going to get. As even you mentioned when you had your problems when you were in England, about you just gave up and had to come back to America to get something taken care of. It's going to be the same system like you talked about. It's not going to be socialized medicine, per se. It'll be socialized medicine for those that can't afford anything else. For those, like you said, that can't afford something else, you're going to be looking at some sort of a form of high-end concierge medicine slash, you know, maybe kind of what stuff was 40 years ago when you went in and, you know, the doctor would spend 30, 40 minutes with you. So, yeah, if we do move down that path, it's going to definitely be a two-tier system. It is not going to be purely a socialized medicine answer to it. And that was a very good interview, by the way, with the doctor.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to get a little deeper. We, you know, I love him, and he can go sometimes. You just wind him up, and let's just turn old Joe chair loose, and he goes. But as, you know, we were talking, you know, I remember being in England. Eventually, I got some concierge-like service, and it changed a lot of things. But he was right about one thing, and that, you know, in Europe, you have heart attack, you have cancer, you have something like that. The immediate thing is getting well. You don't have to worry about the bill because there is no bill. Here, you have a heart attack and you're waiting to have another heart attack when you finally get the bill because of the ridiculous price and the rising healthcare cost. Well, you don't have that. And I can see the frustration. Look, I had a friend a couple weeks ago, dear friend of the family. She had a heart attack. She got the bills and she almost had another heart attack. It was insane. And I get the frustration. I feel the frustration. You should, if you're sick, you should worry about getting well. We have a young listener in the audience named Mason who is fighting a horrible disease, cancer, right now. He's only 13. Him and his dad, Justin, listen to the show all the time. And he said, Mason had to go to the hospital tonight because he's sick. And he goes, this thing's breaking me. That shouldn't be the main thing that people think about when it comes to getting your child well. Is not only do I want my child well, but I got to think about this stuff's breaking me.
No, absolutely. And God bless him. I hope he gets better. But no, absolutely. And that's probably where we've come to with medical care in America and the cost problem that we've talked about multiple times about. It's not just getting somebody a $400 policy a month that's either subsidized or not, with a $14,000 deductible. It's reducing the cost of the actual healthcare itself. Like you talked about the person a couple of weeks ago that had the $2 million bill. Go through that bill, and I'm sure there's got to be $500,000 to $1 million worth of $14 Tylenol tablets or $32 boxes of tissues and things like that are on there. And that's where it gets really ridiculous is that you've got somebody who's willing to pay that kind of stuff. Now, Medicare and some of the military programs, some of the VA stuff doesn't pay those crazy kind of prices. So they can drive some prices down. But overall, the general problem with healthcare is not so much access. It's just that even if you do get access, it is so expensive. We've got to find a way to make it more affordable. We've got to bring the free market into it to make it less expensive just for the purpose of healthcare.
Jim Kennedy's with us as we're going to wrap it up straight ahead. You can text the program, as always, 323-538-2423. You can check him out at Righty Jim. That is on Twitter, at Chad Benson Show. Wrapping it up straight ahead, Chad Benson Show.
Washington Beltway insiders have nothing on us.
We have breaking news that is just coming out now.
Get all the juiciest White House leaks here first.
And free.
Maybe they're trying to tell us something in code.
Wrapping it up, beautiful Friday. Hot on the West Coast. Beautiful around the country. Tell you what, we are blessed in this nation, people. Absolutely blessed. I don't think that we sometimes get it, but it does get frustrating. The politics, the divisiveness that comes between us, and we shouldn't let it be what it is at times. It's insane. It really is. You know, people who will, quite frankly, snap at their friends and eventually unfriend them and eventually not talk to them anymore because they don't like their political views. And I've just never been that person. I've never been that person. I don't know how people do it. I think it's closed-minded. I think it's, life and politics, they shouldn't intercede as much as they do, but we allow it to rule our lives, and we need to start getting back to being cordial with one another. We do. We need to start getting back to the point where we're cordial to one another. And, you know, I'm blessed that I can come on the show and do the show every week. And you guys pay attention and you have fun. And I try to infotain you. And I've gotten more response today about things that I think really matter. Things like having the doctor on. If you have a chance, go grab the podcast with Dr. Joe Chambers. And check out, Dr. ChambersOnCall.com. It's interesting and it's real. And there's a lot of things out there that we still have to accomplish as a nation. And we're going to have to always be moving forward. But I tell you what, those things matter to people. And that is why we focus on those things. The rest of this stuff, the G20, most people have no idea. I tell somebody we're going to G20, like, what kind of car? Is that a jet? Is there a jet called a G20? Is it a band? What is the G20? That sounds like a Fast and the Furious G20. That's what most of the people think. But sitting down and talking about healthcare, dissecting the fact that we have an opioid issue in this country that is becoming epidemic and it is striking people and it's turning them not just from people who are addicted to opioid and prescription pills, but then onto heroin and it's destroying families. That stuff touches everyday life. And it doesn't matter if you're black or white, Republican, gay, straight, Democrat, liberal, progressive, conservative, all of these things, cancer, opioid, addictions, they all play a part in everybody's life. They don't care about your color. They don't care about your wealth. They don't care about any of those things. They'll still come and get you. They will still come and get you. And we're blessed in this country. And let's remember every once in a while, it's nice to be cordial. It's nice to say, you know what? I don't agree with you, but I respect you. And maybe we can learn from each other. Fun show as always. Follow us on all the social medias. Chad Benson Show. Go there. Like it on Facebook. At Chad Benson Show. Twitter. You can always email the show. Chad@ChadBensonShow.com. And check out ChadBensonShow.com. And check out hour number two's interview with Dr. Joe Chambers today. Very good interview. Very solid, eye-opening interview. Have yourself a wonderful, safe week. We'll be back again Monday. Same time, same bat channel. For Phil, for Anthony, my name's Chad Benson. Night, night, Jack.
This is the Chad Benson Show.